Our generation is the most important. You know, our generation are leaders. We can't be leaders if we're dead.
The last unit I was in Korea was 663rd Field Artillery, the atomic cannons. We've been armed to the teeth and belligerent as hell there for 50 years now.
One was prepared to be stopped at airport arriving in Cairo and to be interrogated. Now one is prepared for similar interrogation upon arrival in Washington, D.C.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Tuesday, January 14th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. With tens of thousands of U.S. troops mobilizing for a possible invasion, waves of anti-war activists have descended on Baghdad recently to plead for a peaceful solution to the showdown between the Bush administration and Saddam Hussein's government. The protesters include Italians, South Africans, Germans, and Americans, from church leaders and professors to four women who lost relatives on September 11, 2001. Bianca Jagger, the longtime human rights advocate and former wife of Mick Jagger of the Rolling Stones, is among them. Back at home, the administration continues to talk tough regarding the ongoing weapons inspections in Iraq. However, today, White House spokesman Ari Fleischer found himself bombarded with questions from the press corps during a recent press conference.
From the beginning, the president has made very clear that the burden is on Saddam Hussein to comply and to disarm. Nothing has changed that. The burden remains with Saddam Hussein. The issue is not how long the inspections will last. The issue is whether Saddam Hussein this time is finally willing to disarm. He's been given a final chance to disarm, and regrettably we've seen no evidence that he has made the strategic choice to disarm and to come into compliance with the United Nations. We first saw this in the Iraqi declaration, which the world agreed was inadequate, and Saddam has not complied, and therefore time is running out.
What do you mean by time is running out? How long can you let 200,000 U.S. troops sit in the sand?
The question is, how long will it take for Saddam Hussein to come clean and to prove to the world that he's disarmed?
Dr. Blix and Dr. Obaradi are the experts. That's why they're there. They're the experts. They say they need months to get that proof positive, to get the answer to the question. Why does the president think he knows better?
Well, the president has made plain that the burden does not fall on the inspectors. The burden falls on Saddam Hussein to comply with the inspectors. And that's the judgment of the president. Having judged Iraq's past behavior, their ability to fool the inspectors, to deceive the inspectors, to hide things from the inspectors, and Saddam Hussein's motives moving forward in terms of whether he has indeed changed and is this time cooperating, the president has seen no proof that this time he is complying and willing to disarm.
But the inspectors aren't saying they're being fooled, they're being duped. Does the president think that he knows better than they do as to how effective their work can be?
The inspectors have raised a number of concerns that they have, and they have said they don't believe they're getting full cooperation and compliance from Saddam Hussein. They have found problems that they have cited, and the president is content to let them continue in their work, of course.
It's not up to the inspectors to judge how effective their own work is and can be. It's up to the president to say if their work is over.
No, I think it's something that we're going to continue to work together on.
You say makes it suggest that you've already decided that the answer is that they haven't cooperated.
No matter what, they haven't cooperated.
White House spokesman Ari Fleischer sparring with White House press corps. Head UN Weapons Inspector Hans Blix said the other day that the weapons inspection team needs more time to conduct its investigations, that the January 27th date will only be a progress report, and that it may take as long as a year before the team can fully determine whether Iraq possesses weapons of mass destruction or whether it can be given a clean bill of health. Meanwhile, the U.S. is preparing to move an additional 67,000 troops and six aircraft carriers to striking distance of Iraq, and it's continuing ahead with its plans to launch attacks within the next month or so. The U.S. says that time is running out, but it refuses to issue a timetable of its proposed actions. Peace Watch spoke earlier today with Ian Williams, U.N. correspondent for The Nation magazine, and we asked him what sort of timetable he sees evolving at the United Nations and with the U.S.'s war plans.
In a column I do for Global Vision last week, I said that I think the Pentagon will be investing in air conditioners for its Humvees and its tanks. The real problem that the administration faced was, first of all, they haven't got the troops in place yet, which I think several newspapers remarked on this morning. And secondly, was that they haven't persuaded the Turks and the Saudis and the others to go along without a UN resolution. In fact, some of them are fairly dubious, even with a UN resolution. So I think that Colin Powell is having some effect. I have maintained that he's probably got a placard stuck up in the Oval Office with a sign saying, "It's the geography, stupid," because they need allies in the neighborhood, let alone the rest of the world. So I think that's where some of the, you know, the more vociferous hawks are backpedaling while they try to win a majority and get the hearts and minds in the Security Council. And the problem there is that there's no smoking gun and there's no bubbling vats of botulin yet being discovered. And they're going to need those if they're going to get the majority that they want in the Security Council.
And we say impending war. Do you feel as though it's still impending?
I'm sure that Washington wants it, but I think reality is sinking in and they are beginning to realize that they can't do it on their own. They have to win other people over. So I think the rhetoric about unilateral action has certainly been toned down considerably.
Well, we're hearing, of course, that U.S. allies, including Britain and France, are now backing down from their prior level of support, and they're saying that the U.S. should give the U.N. process a chance to work. Is the Bush administration having to back down at all?
Well, it's not even a sense of backing down, since it's been a bit Janus-faced. It's been two-faced all along. You've got Colin Powell and the rational wing have been pushing the U.N. and the multilateral line, and the usually described as White House spokesman from round Cheney and Rumsfeld pushing a unilateral line. So it's a case of the volume of one side or the other, and certainly at the moment the Colin Powell multilateral line has got the volume up and the others are much more muted. So in that sense, yes, they've backed down in the sense that they've shut up the hawks for the time being.
Well, what about any indications that the Bush administration is cranking up its campaign to shore up renewed support amongst its allies? Where is Colin Powell, for example?
Well, it's been working very hard. And, you know, Colin Powell will win somebody over, and then shortly afterwards, someone like Paul Wolfowitz will appear and undo all his good work. These people make American diplomacy like an oxymoron. It's they're two contradictory terms almost. The thing that most people, we have to realize, is that most people in the world think that Saddam Hussein is a problem. They don't think he's the major problem at the moment. It's a case of priorities. So in that sense, half the battle is already won for the Colin Powells when they're coming for support. But it's questions like whether it's a bigger priority than the Israel-Palestine issue or the Turkey-Greek issue in Cyprus or the North Korean issue or Central Africa, Democratic Republic of the Congo.
And isn't it also a question of not if Saddam Hussein needs to be dealt with, but how? Is it appropriate to carry out all-in-out regime change?
I doubt very much that there'll ever be a UN resolution calling for the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. There will be a call for action at the most, if it's found with the smoking gun or the bubbling vats of botulin or whatever else they discover. And even then, most people think that they're there. They're there waiting to be found at some point. Even the ones who are opposing the U.S. action are sort of fairly convinced that Iraq does have these programs. But to convince people, you have to produce them, and then the resolution would say that the military action against Iraq to secure enforcement of previous decisions. And the overthrow of Saddam Hussein would be, let us say, a fortunate byproduct of such an action. It wouldn't be the main purpose of the action.
Has North Korea really thrown a crimp into the Bush administration's plan to attack Iraq?
It's complicated it because it raises the question, I think you see even here in the American public opinion polls, it sort of raises the question of precisely why is this administration so monomaniac about Iraq and why is Iraq potentially having nuclear weapons a threat, whereas North Korea actually having them isn't a threat. But I think the assessment of a lot of people is that North Korea is just trying it out. It's an opportunistic reaction in that they see that America is preoccupied. They know that the chances of actual military confrontation with America are reduced. So they're really just pulling the chain to get what they really want, which is a non-aggression statement from the United States and fuel, oil, and whatever other types of financial aid can come. So It's not that they're threatening to use their nuclear weapon. It's more that they're using the leverage it gives them to get what they want off the U.S. And there's lots of other people. I mean, you know, even as you speak in Washington, there are Israeli government delegations trying to shake down the U.S. taxpayer for $12 billion for their forbearance in sitting on the sidelines during the impending war. The Turks have produced similar sums. They want marine assault helicopters so that they can attack across the mountains. Go figure. You know, there's lots of people will be trying to make a quick buck in one way or another out of the U.S.'s preoccupation. Those who are in a strategic position will probably get away with it.
Ian, what do you think the implications would be if in the long run, in terms of the credibility of the U.S., if it were to launch a unilateral attack against Iraq?
Well, the short and medium-term implication is massive regime change across the Middle East for any government that supported tacitly or actively such a unilateral invasion. The Saudis, the Gulf states, the Jordanians, lots of people would be very, very rickety. I think, you know, there would be profound resentment amongst ordinary Arabs and Muslims across the world and in Europe even. But I think the longer-term implication is in many ways more threatening for all of us because it means that effectively the United States would have ripped up the whole international security system that's protected us from World War III for the last 55 years or however many it is. Because the basic rules since 1945 say that you cannot attack another country except in self-defense or you can't attack without the United Nations Security Council say so. So if the United States does that, then basically they're establishing a precedent whereby, you know, the Argentinians can go into Chile because they don't like the color of the snow coming down the Andes, and any excuse whatsoever from then onwards. Mm-hmm. Because no matter how you cut it, you can say it's self-defense, but in the long run you need to persuade a jury of your peers, and the best jury we have at the moment is the Security Council, that there is a genuine threat and that genuine action has to be taken. If you fail that test, then you've already failed the test of world opinion in lots of ways.
Nation magazine reporter Ian Williams. High school students at Wilson High in a middle-class section of Washington, D.C., defied both administrators and police today and walked out of class to protest the Bush administration's plans to launch a war that could very well lead to the occupation of Iraq. Ingrid Drake, WBIX Refugees and Exiles Radio Network in Washington, was there.
I'm glad that the police has been at bay so far because yesterday the organizers were threatened by the school authorities with suspension, and they were also alerted to the fact that they would be subject to arrest if they decided to go forward with this demonstration. I just returned from Egypt a few days ago, where we have heard broadcasts of Mr. Powell's speech to the Arab world, suggesting that the Bush administration is about to embark on a program of democratization of the Arab world. And it is really ironic that here we are living in a McCarthyan-like era where students are actually made to fear consequences of arrest and so on. And this is the sample of democracy that the Bush administration has in store for the Arab world. One was prepared to be stopped at airport arriving in Cairo and to be interrogated. Now one is prepared for similar interrogation upon arrival in Washington, D.C. It's a real shame that the Republican administration, which was actually appointed to govern the United States, is now trying to export its brand of democracy to the rest of the world.
Were there any other intimidations that the youth organizers have experienced?
Yes, in front of the house of one of the organizers, there were two policemen who broke a liquor bottle and left it close to their house. So that's obviously, again, to bring fear to these young people, which is really sad, because here they read about democracy at Wilson High School, and when they try to put democracy into practice, they are intimidated and they are urged to rescind their decision to go ahead and express their constitutionally guaranteed right to free expression.
So how is it like to demonstrate in Egypt?
For one thing, it's much warmer. you know, we don't have this kind of play on democracy. I mean, we just go, we don't get a permit and so on. When we're there, of course, we are subjected to harassment, especially at the large demonstration which we had at Cairo University last spring. We were sprayed with water cannons, we were, and of course, tear gas. We picked up some of the tear gas canisters, and they were, of course, manufactured in the U.S. And this is part of the export package which the United States provides to its client regimes throughout the Arab world, of which Iraq, of course, had been one until the time became convenient for the U.S. to have direct control over the resources of Iraq, and hence this change of heart towards the regime. And when people talk about weapons of mass destruction, including the biological forms, they must remember that it was actually corporations right here in the greater Washington, D.C. area and in Virginia and Maryland who provided these weapons of mass destruction to the Iraqi regime.
Where was the meeting done in Cairo?
The meeting actually was to initiate a campaign organized by an Egyptian broad spectrum of political orientations. It's a campaign against U.S. hegemony and globalization. Of course, when we talk about our opposition to U.S. hegemony, it relates to the issue of war on Iraq, as well as the unwavering support of the Zionist entity of Israel to the detriment of the Palestinian people. At the same time, we wanted to integrate our movement into the global movement. Now, as you well know, the global movement against globalization has, in fact, demonstrated in support of both the Palestinian cause and against the war. But with the Cairo conference, we wanted to set the agenda ourselves and call for solidarity from others, because it's one thing to have support from the outside, it's another to simply be the follower of an agenda that is set by Western elements, even if they have the very good intentions of standing up against imperialism. There is a danger that those who oppose imperialism can sometimes be the agents of imperialism itself by determining the priorities for third world people in our struggle against U.S. imperialism.
Who showed up in Cairo?
About 35 guests from Europe and the United States, including Italy, France, the UK, Germany, and there were people from Cuba, people from the United States, people from Russia, and of course many non-Egyptian Arabs from different parts of the Arab world, including a member of the patriotic Iraq opposition who lives in Paris. We tried to have representation of the different democratic forces from within the Arab world and beyond. And of course, there were hundreds of Egyptians who also attended the conference. And we came away from the conference with the Cairo Declaration, which has now been endorsed by many, many people, members of parliament in the UK, people from the Transnational Institute in Paris. A resolution is going to be introduced in the Russian Duma to adopt the Cairo Declaration and throughout the Arab world.
What does the declaration say?
The declaration basically points out that the assault on Iraq and the U.S. support of Zionist Israel is but part of the larger strategy that the U.S. has openly declared to install its total and absolute control over the world, which actually was the result of a strategy which is published either in the form of the Project for the New American Century, where you have the known group of warmongers, the Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Wolfowitz. I mean, these are the architect of the strategy of world domination. And as the National Security Report, which was recently released, also points out, that the emphasis on total and absolute control, that the idea of national sovereignty is outmoded, that the United States will not allow for any power in any part of the world to challenge its complete and absolute hegemony. So we're against that. There was a clear opposition to the war against Iraq, recognizing that democracy is something that we aspire to not only in Iraq but throughout the Arab region. This is a democracy that we, the people of the Arab world, are responsible for bringing about. It is not going to be imposed. In fact, the declaration even goes so far as to declare that we will stand in support of our regime influence in the Arab world if they are to be removed by force from the outside, no matter what power tries to do that. In relation to Palestine, we emphasize the right of return of the Palestinian people, the total consistent violation of all UN resolutions on the part of Israel, essentially the Holocaust, which is going on in Palestine, and the world is simply watching. And at the same time, you know, the war on Iraq is sometimes used as a diversion, and sometimes this kind of empty promise of a Palestinian state of the Bush administration serves sometimes to placate the anger of the people in the Arab world. One thing that one has to realize is that the United States administration is putting a lot of pressure not only on Arab governments but governments throughout the world. The Egyptian government is under pressure from the U.S. to control any expression of dissent.
That was Suhair Morsi, the grandmother of one of the organizers of today's Wilson High School walkout, a longtime medical anthropologist at Michigan State and Berkeley University, and a known Egyptian-American civil rights activist in the U.S. and the Arab world. Morsi stood in the bitter cold this morning supporting her granddaughter's efforts of participatory democracy. She was speaking with Reem Kathuta, Peace Watch's producer from WPFW in Washington. Well, the protests, as we've heard, was a lively one. Ingrid Drake has more in this report.
Here at the corner of Wisconsin and Albemarle Avenues in northwest Washington, D.C., outside the metro station, young people are burning incense, drumming, jumping up and down in the rhythm of the drums, keeping themselves warm, eating Oreo cookies, and holding their signs up so that people will honk for peace.
You know, people are always talking about how our generation is most important. You know, our generation are leaders. We can't be leaders if we're dead. You know, and people say that education is the most important thing for our generation while forcing students to leave school to go fight a war, to go bomb students that are trying to go to school and go bomb their schools so they can't go to school. It doesn't make any sense.
We won't fight for Texaco.
It's amazing what I see right now. I mean, I'm a graduate of Wilson, and I was one of the original members of a group called The Movement, which organized this, and it's just great to see Wilson kids to come together and organize something like this on their own. This is the next level. This is what we've been trying to do for the past 3 years. You know, we've been trying to get people out here motivated to demonstrate on their own and to express what they feel to the powers that be. So we're taking this to the streets in this act of civil disobedience.
Could you tell me why you're out here today?
Well, you heard about this No Child Left Behind Act to kind of set off this protest here.
I'm against the war. This is ridiculous. One of my great friends said it at an open mic. Saddam Hussein wants to kill his people, but instead the U.S. is going to go in there and kill them for him. Tell me your name and your age.
Tiffany Cohen, 17.
And what are you doing out here?
I just think that we should just let war go. I mean, it's no sense of it. It's like people need education and we're wasting money on something else.
How do you think a war with Iraq would impact you?
Well, it's not going to have an impact on me. It's going to have an impact on everyone. It's not just me. So I'm just not worried about myself. I'm worried about my community and my environment that I have to live in.
I'm Roshana Hadri Khan, and I go to Alice Deal Junior High School. Since we're in Washington, D.C., we can make a difference. I mean, Bush, if this gets through to him, we can make a difference. And I think if everyone does it around the country, that he'll eventually maybe listen.
Our families, as well as families over there that are innocent, are going to be affected by it. No way for a child to grow up in war, knowing that they have friends and family that are going to fight a war, that most of the people that they love or know that are in the army are probably going to die.
Do you know anyone who would have to go overseas to fight?
Yes, I have my cousin and two of my friends' parents. They're on their way to go and fight.
Could you please read me your sign?
Dinero para la educación, no para la guerra, which is money for education and not for war.
No! My sign says breaking the cycle of violence is through the cycle of peace.
Your sign says no to the No Child Left Behind Act. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the No Child Left Behind Act has a clause that says that if schools get funding, then they need to give all of the students information so that they can be recruited by the military, and we don't agree with that.
The youth organizers coordinated a training on Sunday, 2 days before the demonstration.
What happened to the message?
It never got a chance to be told.
Right, what happened to the message? And what happened?
It was forgot.
They rushed you.
We were caught off guard.
Caught off guard. What can you do to prevent that from happening?
Be aware.
Maybe having one person be aware.
My name is Adrian Finucane, and I go to Wilson. I'm with about 20 other students in the basement of MLK Library, and I'm learning about nonviolent resistance and media outreach to prepare for a protest on Tuesday the 14th.
My name is Nick Ojeda. I'm a senior at Wilson High School. What I would like to see on Tuesday is for students of all races, ages, and backgrounds standing hand by hand protesting war as a way to solve problems in a war in Iraq.
My name is Jasmine Ward, and I'm 15 years old. And on Tuesday, I'd like to see the government actually take a time out to realize that what we're doing isn't just like something that some silly kids came up with, that is actually well planned out, and we actually stand for something and do not see it somewhat exploited or turned around into something that it's not.
Commuters stopped on their way to work to watch the demonstrations, and parents were also there to support their children.
I'm up here on business today. I have a couple of appointments, and I just kind of bumped into this and I decided to stay and watch for a while. I'm kind of intrigued. Certainly believe that there shouldn't be a war. Further, really believe in their right to express themselves. They seem to be pretty ruly about the whole thing and enthusiastic. I believe the big march should be this weekend, and I hope it's well attended. And I have a son that's just graduated this week from Parris Island in the Marines, and I'm sure he'll be in the infantry, and he's following his beliefs, and they're following theirs, and that's what this country's all about.
I'm Fouad Foti. I'm an Arab-American, and I have a daughter here that's involved in this protest, and I support her fully.
My son is a student at Deal. He's a ninth grader, and we're against the war. We want to make a statement. He will be going to school when school starts, and I'll be going to work. But we want to support the great job that these kids at Wilson have done, because they've really outshone a lot of adults in their organization.
There's a few kids that are thinking ahead that, you know, that this might be a really terrible thing. And unfortunately, the 60s protesting happened way after the war started. When you try to move that ship around, it's much harder than before it starts.
My name is Barbro. I'm from Norway, and I think it's great that finally the U.S. is reacting against what's going on.
Do you all have a message to tell students across the country?
You don't have to accept what the president tells you. Just go with your own beliefs. I just want to encourage students to get involved, no matter what their opinion is on the war, just to think about it.
No war in Iraq. No blood for oil. Peace.
That piece prepared by Ingrid Drake. Listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be right back.